good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to today's edition of Information Week Live. Information Week Live for the week of May 8th, 2016. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and we have a great show for you this week. I'm going to do our best to make up for the fact that there was no show last week, and the reason there was no show last week is that, well, pretty much all of us were on the road doing the Information Week Elite 100 Conference and Interop. To help me talk about that this week, we have three of my fellow editors. We have Jessica Davis, who is Senior Editor for Information Week. Jessica, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you so much, Curtis. Thanks for having me on.
Also joined by Charlie Babcock, Information Week Editor at Large. Charlie, welcome to Information Week Live.
Good to be here again, Kurt. Good to talk to you.
And last but certainly not least, we're joined by Scott Ferguson, Director of Audience Development at Information Week. And Scott, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
Glad you could have me, Kurt. Thank you.
Well, we were all at the conferences for varying lengths of time, and the first thing I'd like to do is just sort of go around the virtual table and ask everyone what stood out for them at the conference or conferences. And Charlie, I'm going to start with you. What really stood out for you in terms of stories or trends that you saw at the Information Week conference or at Interop?
Well, Kurt, there were many things, but I guess the thing I remember the best was listening to Ryan Floyd speak. He's a venture capitalist from Storm Ventures. I always kind of like that name. It makes me think they're sort of on the leading edge and that they're where the action is. That may not be the case, but they've had a number of very good investments over the years, and Ryan Floyd spoke of the attractiveness of investing at this time in software as a service. It's fairly well known that's a growing field, but it may not be understood just how much it's likely to grow. He said from $56 billion a year ago to $493 billion by 2026. That's a 10-year time frame, but that is a very big market by the time we get there. And we already, you know, have some familiar names on the tips of our tongues, like Salesforce and Workday and NetSuite. And there's a bunch of lesser-known software as a service companies, but that are very active and racking up the customers. Eloqua, Intact, Intuit is now software as a service as much as on the PC, Sugar CRM, and others. But this just struck me as hitting the nail on the head. There's going to be a lot of good software produced as a service online and a lot of money to be made in that field.
Well, Charlie, I've got to say I can't disagree with that. I also heard a lot of people out on the Interop floor talking about software as a service, heard a lot of the CIOs who were the attendees at the Information Week conference talking about software as a service, and I'm hearing more about it. I'm going to be heading out to SAP Sapphire next week, and they've certainly gotten heavily into both software as a service and platform as a service. I guess the question, based on what you're seeing, is there going to be any room left for just old-fashioned, licensed, on-premise software?
Yes, there will, for sure. That will not go out of style for a good long time yet. I think Floyd's prediction included the fact that after we get to 2026 and we have all this software as a service available, that it will still only constitute about 50% of the market. And what the rest is, I'm not 100% sure. At least some of it is enterprise licenses.
Well, Jessica, I'd like to turn to you real quickly, because I know that you focus a lot of your attention on the whole enterprise software market, the sort of big enterprise applications that run on the back end of so much enterprise software. What are you seeing in terms of these trends? Are you aware of any of the big enterprise software players who aren't offering their package as a SaaS offering? Is there anyone out there who's really bucking the trend?
You know, I don't think so, Curtis. I don't think so. And it's interesting. I think some customers are dragging their feet on that. I know that back before Oracle Open World last year, I spoke with their user group president, and she told me that her organization wasn't in any kind of rush to move their systems into the cloud. That said, Oracle really pushed very hard to have a clear vision in terms of hybrid cloud presence during that conference. As both you know, Curtis and Charlie, I think you were at that particular conference. And it's interesting, too, because Salesforce had a big outage in their software as a service this past week. I did speak to some analysts about it, and they said, no, that's not going to undermine people's confidence in the cloud. But certainly enterprises should look at their service level agreements and any whether it provides for any kind of monetary compensation for outages going forward, because there's always going to be outages, whether it's on-premise or not.
Well, I think it's remarkable that as an industry, we are so forgiving and so willing to let bygones be bygones that we won't let a little thing like complete unavailability of critical software get in the way of the market expanding. That says a lot of good about us, don't you think?
You know, it's funny, too, because I just looked at, while we were talking, I just looked at the status of that Salesforce instance, and they're still having a performance degradation over there on NA14. So that started on Tuesday, and today's Friday. So that's quite a while.
Well, as long as they're on top of it, I think that's what's critical. Well, let's turn to you, Charlie. We'll come back to you for more of your insight in a moment, but Jessica, how about you? When in your time out in Las Vegas, what sort of story stood out for you among what you were hearing and seeing?
You know, Curtis, and maybe it's because my beat is along the lines of analytics and big data and enterprise applications, but it stood out to me that all of the top five of the Elite 100 really, their projects were really focused around data and around really getting business value out of data and using that data for the business. And certainly there were a number of other companies talking about that as well. But when I look at the top five on our Elite 100 page, that totally stands out to me. Capital One, the Weather Company, all of them. So, I think we're going to be seeing that more and more.
You know, it's fascinating because I had a conversation with the company earlier today, and I can't go into the details because the information is under embargo until Monday. But this is in a category that you wouldn't think of normally as being deeply analytical. I mean, this is a very process-oriented, physical manufacturing-oriented sort of segment. But one of the big selling points of the new product we were talking about is how much analytical data it provides. And it really plays into what a lot of companies are picturing as the industrial Internet of Things, being able to really get in there and analyze what all of the stuff around us is doing in the enterprise, whether it's a vehicle or an assembly line machine or a robot or whatever it is. It just seems like we want to know down to a sense of greater and greater detail what's going on with all our stuff. Is that roughly what you're seeing as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. That is one of the huge, huge use cases. And the number two company in the Elite 100, the weather company, was focused. Their project was focused on forecasting and on IoT. And really, as their CIO says, the CIO of the weather company says, weather is really the classic big data problem. I mean, you are collecting all kinds of data from remote weather stations, barometric pressure, wind speed, humidity, temperature, and you're using that to predict the weather, to predict what will happen in the future. And So their project was very focused on the Internet of Things and forecasting and predictive analytics and bringing some of that value to other businesses as well. Weather is one of the big things that impacts businesses, one of the biggest external forces that impacts business results. So, and not just for retailers who are selling snow shovels, but for, say, insurance companies who may want to tell their customer, hey, bring your car inside of the garage tonight because there may be a hailstorm coming. So there are so many applications, and that's really a classic example of one of the big ones right there is weather forecasting and weather stations.
Well, Scott, you've been very quiet over there in your corner of the studio, so want to bring you into the discussion. When you were talking to executives out in Las Vegas, did you hear any of them talking about this notion of wanting to increase the depth of their analytics or get a better picture of what's going on in their organization? Was that it, or were there some other big trends that really stood out for you?
Yeah, Kurt. So we conducted about 10 to 12 video interviews with a number of different CIOs and senior vice presidents at this show, and as Jessica said, and I think as you said as well, looking through the Elite 100 and who made the list this year, it's definitely a lot of analytics projects, and not so much analytics for the sake of the IT department, but analytics projects that can be created and then offer more value throughout the entire company. That was sort of the push and pull of what a lot of these CIOs had to say when we were talking to them on camera. A lot of them talked about not only do they have these analytics projects, but as a CIO, your role is changing and you're not so much buying technology anymore for the sake of buying technology and building up an infrastructure. You're sort of working with the individual departments themselves and through the wishes and wants and needs of those departments, you're kind of getting an idea of what the company needs to run more efficiently. So you have obviously the one role, making sure everything that you have is what you need and you're up to date, but also answering those businesses that sit within the company, whether it's the sales team, the marketing team, could be the guys on the manufacturing floor. What do they need in order to get their job done? And analytics is playing a huge role in it. I was reminded of a conversation we had and I just want to make sure I get the man's name correctly, Vivek Shavia, who's the EVP and CIO at La Quinta Inns. And we were talking about how analytics is so important to them, so important to getting that customer experience right. And at the same time, he said, not only are we looking at analytics differently, but there's so many more places that you can gather data from that you never had access to before. They're going to be going through their call center and looking at voice data that's left at their call center to try to improve their customer experience. So, again, it's that level of not only do you have a lot of analytics that you have to do, you can also draw it in from different places that you might never have been able to draw it in before. And that's where it dovetails with, as you said, Kurt, the Internet of Things, both the industrial Internet of Things, where you're on the shop floor and looking at what a mechanical object or a robot is producing in through those sensors, as well as that sort of top level stuff that we see in analytics dashboards that we might be getting from our phones or our computers or other places.
Very cool. Now, Charlie, I want to turn to you with a question. I know that you keep your eye on a lot of open source projects. And as you're hearing the discussion about all the analytics, are there open source components that you hear people using a lot in their analytics projects? Are people using containers a great deal in enterprise analytics? What's going on to bring those trends together?
That's a hard one for me to answer. I think people are using containers, but not necessarily yet in very big projects like analytics and big data projects. I don't know for sure. Certainly, they are using Hadoop and another dozen NoSQL systems that have proven very useful for capturing, sorting, and then analyzing data. I think of the container use as being championed by application developers who want a set of application components, each running independently and with lots of horsepower behind them on a cluster. And that's still an emerging field. At some point, I'm sure containers will be moving into big data type of applications. I have not seen myself a case where they were widely used in one yet.
Well, it's nice to know that there's still an area where there's room to grow for containers and other open source components.
Yep.
Let's keep going on around the table. And Scott, I want to get back to you because I had asked both Charlie and Jess what the big things they saw were. What really stood out for you when you were in Las Vegas is as the kind of big stories that people were talking about?
Well, I think going back to the Information Week conference, and we sort of touched on it a little bit when we were just talking just before, was the changing role of the CIO and the people who are in charge of the technology within a company and how their role is changing. In other words, they're not isolated spots anymore within the company, that they not only is technology company-wide, which obviously has been a trend for the last 25 years, but the relationship between the CIO and the other layers of the business and how that is changing a lot and trying to work together with those other players within the company to make sure, again, that they're getting what they need, as well as the CIO trying to be forward-thinking and making sure that they're staying ahead of the curve and making sure that their projects are getting done and what the company core needs as well are taken care of. You also heard a lot about the talent pool and retaining good talent and making sure, as the CIO, are you not only retaining the good talent, but you're also looking for new talent to bring in specifically for these type of projects that Jessica and Charlie talked about, cloud-related. analytics related, IoT related, getting those type of people in. We spoke to one person and they said, you know, it's managing a lot of different groups now. You have one group at one set and one group with another set of skills, and making sure that not only are they working well amongst the group, but as well as working together in multiple different groups, that way your projects are getting done on time. So you're seeing a lot of that. What I thought was funny, and when we talked to a lot of CIOs, they all seemed to mention that they were glad to be at the conference because they were glad to see that their problems are the problems that all the other CIOs are having, so that they're not alone in dealing with these challenges. They're dealing with stuff that the CIO at the table sitting next to them is also dealing with. You didn't hear a lot about, well, my budget is low or I got to cut costs, but you really said, okay, we have a certain level of technology now. We have a certain level of talent within here. How do we sort of bring that forward and do what we really want to do here? And as Charlie and, again, as Jessica said before, the cloud and analytics has made so much more of this stuff possible, and people are comfortable with the technology now that they want to see what they can do for it for their business. You know, lots of working with marketing and sales teams to get toward the company goals.
You know, Kurt, that's right on. The change in role of the CIO was very much present there this year. I was at Cloud Connect, and Mark Teeley, he's a VP at Apsara now, but he's done stints at VMware, and I believe one of the major data center builders. He's kind of a data center strategy guy. And he did a talk called Hybrid Cloud is the Assumption. What is the plan? And he very much sees the big picture that we all do, that many things are going to move into the cloud. But he sounded the contrary note of what is the plan? What is the role of IT? Not only that, but how do you survive as a company with this move to the cloud? And he painted a picture of needing to understand what IT is crucial to your company and perhaps keeping that in-house, moving everything else into the cloud. But he urged companies to cultivate IT skills that would allow them to operate the core systems very efficiently in-house and not move them necessarily into the cloud. So what is the plan? It's kind of a new wrinkle on well, we're moving to the cloud, aren't we? It highlights the changing role of this CIO, CTO.
You know, Charlie, that's interesting because it goes along with something, and Scott mentioned this. I had noticed it, but he really brought it home. This is the first time in a while that I did not hear I didn't hear any CIOs talking about the huge chunks that had been taken out of their budget and how much reduced their budget for next year was going to be, or how much reduced their budget for this year was going to be. They were talking a lot about how to deliver value to the business. Now, that's a huge issue. But doing it in terms that indicated that businesses are making the investments that will let IT give them a decent return, rather than simply trying to choke all of the money out of a cost center that's possible. I think that's a significant change, and one that is certainly welcome over what we were seeing 5 or even 10 years ago. Jessica, I know that you talked to some CIOs as well while you were out there. Were you hearing something different, or was this in line with what the CIOs you spoke with were saying as well?
You know, Curtis, that's so interesting because now that you mention it, I don't remember anyone talking to me about budget concerns at all. And going back to what Scott said, I heard just lots of excitement from people about the projects they were working on, about their efforts to bring value to the business. Certainly about challenges they had as well in terms of finding the right skill sets, finding the right staffing, but honestly, a huge level of excitement and not the budget concerns that now that you mention it, I heard none of that at all. A very astute point.
Well, we have all had some good points. I want to go around the table just one more time. We're running down close to the end of the show, but I want to get everyone a chance to spend just a minute or two to talk about a story that maybe we haven't gotten a chance to mention yet. And Scott, I'll go to you first. What else did you see that you think deserves a mention that we just hadn't gotten to yet?
Well, I think, too, what we didn't talk about, which is obviously one thing, what was one presentation, but obviously it was on the minds of everybody. And, of course, when I say it, it'll be, like, so obvious. It's security. We talked about IoT. We talked about cloud. We talked about analytics. We needed to talk about security. I believe it was actually Charlie who wrote about the Intermountain presentation that was there to talk a little bit about security, what's going on there. I think it was interesting because they're all dealing with it. A couple CIOs that I spoke with at the show mentioned that security is now part of their portfolio, whether they are now the chief information security officer as well as the CIO, or if the chief information security officer is reporting into them directly now. It's part of the portfolio. Some people have picked it up. Some people have now really started to concern themselves. A lot of when they talked about budget, when they said where would they spend their money, they're like, well, of course we have to spend it on security. It's so important. So you have all this data. You're analyzing all this data. How do you protect all this data, especially when it's coming in from so many different endpoints? And that's both the beauty and horror of IoT, that everything is pulling in data. How do you make sure that every little endpoint, every little sensor is secure as you pull in that data into your system? So that's probably the one thing we didn't talk about a lot here, but obviously it was on the minds of just about everybody who was at the show.
I think the beauty and horror of IoT is one of those things that needs to be a special episode at some point. It's just the best title I've heard in a long time. So Scott, thank you for that. Appreciate that. Charlie, how about you? What have we not talked about yet that you think deserves at least a mention before we wrap up today's show?
Well, I heard speaker Keith Townsend. He is the author of CTOAdvisor.com. Talk about serverless applications, and that's kind of a genuinely new approach and topic. It relies on services in the cloud to do a kind of core processing of an application that's triggered by an event at the enterprise data center or on the enterprise website. In effect, you use an event engine on AWS. You preload AWS with a microservice, some kind of a bit of JavaScript, let's say, that will do something if the event triggers the event engine. And the example I came up with, I'm not 100% sure it's valid, but it's the one that I thought of as I listened to this, was you could do an inventory check when somebody places an order on your website by triggering the Lambda event engine on AWS, which goes and retrieves a bit of JavaScript that tells that knows how to check an inventory system for a part that's been ordered, so that you can report back to the customer that the part is in stock and can be delivered in a certain time frame. And, of course, there's a server involved, but there's no server for the person getting the benefit of the application. It's just a bit of code that's been stored in the cloud, triggered by a local event that travels up to the cloud telling the event engine to do something, and it retrieves the code, which then does the inventory check. At any rate, I think applications in the future are going to look very small on premises and multi-parts in the cloud, where there are plenty of servers, but we call them serverless applications.
Very good. Serverless applications. I like that. It seems in many ways like the ultimate software as a service trend, the final endpoint where we don't have servers at all. Well, thank you, Charlie, for bringing that to us. I'll be back to you in a moment to find out what's coming up. And Jessica, before we close, how about you? What did we not get to talk about that you think our listeners really need to be aware of this week?
Well, I'm just thinking about that recruitment issue again in terms of the analytics and people with that skill set. I know that one of the discussions at a lunch table where I was sitting was about the fact that you can hire data scientists and analysts to do a lot of expensive research and find out the obvious answer to the question. And they find out the obvious answer because they don't have the domain knowledge about that particular business. So they deliver to the business the obvious answer that the business already knew about. I have heard that one of the solutions that one of our Elite 100 companies has used was embedding the data scientists within the business teams, so that there was collaboration between the people who had the data science and analytics expertise and the people who had the business domain knowledge, so that they were solving for the problems that the business cared about, really, the deep problems that would make a big impact. So I found that very interesting. And I think that the recruitment question is going to be one that becomes even more important. It's kind of a wild west out there right now in terms of hiring people with these skill sets. They're looking for three different skill sets for these analytics professionals. The math skills, the high-level math skills, the high-level computer programming skills, and the business domain knowledge. They want all that together in one person. What I've heard from another one of our Elite 100 attendees was that he goes to meetups about data science and meets with different people, finds people who have aptitude, and then hires them and trains them up in the areas where they need to come up to speed. So I think there's going to be some innovative and interesting solutions to the recruitment issues around analytics coming up in the future.
It sounds like the sort of thing that you're going to be keeping your finger on and telling all the readers at Information Week about in the weeks and months upcoming, and I can hardly wait. I'm looking forward to that. Well, it is that time once again. You have spent a half hour with us here at Information Week Live. Before we let our panelists go, though, we're going to ask them a couple of questions that we always ask them, and that is what they've got in the pipeline for the coming week and where we can keep up with them on social networks. Jessica, we're going to start with you. What's in the pipeline, and how can we keep up with all your various writings by following you on the social media?
People can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jessica Davis, no space between the Jessica and Davis. I got in early and got the good name. And then I will be looking at that recruitment issue coming up. And I'm putting together a piece about some of the free online training that people can take in analytics and data science, and just to kind of get a taste to see if it's something they want to pursue and maybe invest more in their own skill set. So that should be coming in the next week.
Outstanding. We'll be looking forward to reading that. And thanks for being with us today, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
Charlie, how about you? What's in your pipeline for the coming week, and how can we follow you on the Tweety Pipes and other social media?
Kurt, I'll be following ServiceNow. I started out talking about software as a service. I'll end up talking about software as a service. They have their Knowledge 16 user group meeting in Las Vegas next week. I'll be following that. I know a little bit about it, but I can't spill the beans without getting in trouble with my sources there. But keep reading and follow me at BabcockCW on Twitter.
We will certainly do that, and look forward to the articles. And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, Scott, I know that the things that you do for Information Week don't often give you time to have your byline on pieces, but you do have a chance to sort of look around and cast an eye over everything that's happening. So is there anything in general at Information Week that we should sort of be aware of for the coming week? And I know that you are still active on social media, so how can we keep up with you?
Well, looking ahead to next week, I think I'll be looking at, and I hope everybody else is looking at, the information that comes out of Google I.O. Tom Claiborne, one of our editors at large, will be covering the show in California, so keep an eye on that. Lots of Android news, some virtual reality news, and just sort of stirred up that Google might be coming out with an Amazon Echo competitor, a digital assistant for your home that will work with Google's digital assistant that you can find on their Android phone. So lots of good stuff coming out of that, kind of see what the zeitgeist is from that show. So I'll be keeping an eye on that. On Twitter, I have a rather unusual handle. It is ZDE Ferguson at Twitter. I will not go into how that I wound up with that one, except to tell you there's a lot of Scott Fergusons in the world who got in there ahead of me. In addition, Kurt, we talked a little bit about this. We were having some technical issues with the Information Week LinkedIn page that you can find on LinkedIn. Those issues have been resolved as of yesterday, so information will be flowing again to our LinkedIn page, and if anybody in the audience would like to check that out, I encourage you to do so. We'll be updating that more often, so hopefully you can get some news off of LinkedIn as well as Twitter.
Very good. Well, Scott, thanks for taking time out of a very busy schedule to be with us today. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And as for me, I'm going to be on the road again next week. SAP's Sapphire Now Conference, their largest international gathering of customers and third-party software developers, service providers, and company executives will be meeting in Orlando, Florida next week. I will be there. We'll be bringing coverage of that to the pages of Information Week. And you can, as Scott said, if you're on LinkedIn, head on over to the Information Week group. There is a group associated with Information Week. Ask to join. I promise you will be approved really quickly. And there's going to be a lot of new information there, not just text articles and links, but a lot of cool stuff that we've got planned for our LinkedIn group. As for me, you can follow me on Twitter and Periscope at KG4GWA. And do keep an eye out for lots of stuff coming your way from SAP Sapphire. I know that Tuesday afternoon, In one of the keynote sessions, the speakers include Steve Wozniak and the creative director of Cirque du Soleil. I'm looking forward to being able to do lots of tweets about both of those. Well, for all of us here at Information Week Live, thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to this in a streaming or podcast format, please remember that we are live every week at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and there is a great conversation that goes on at informationweek.com around the radio show. We would love to have your voice in that conversation. Until next week, this is Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and your host saying thanks so much for being with us. Hey, we'll see you next time.